This is the South Washington County Bulletin Podcast for June 6, 2008, and I'm Managing Editor Patricia Dre Bussey. For today's show, I talked with Newport City Administrator Larry Bodall about the city's aging levee and what is being done there to prevent disaster. But first, here's a news summary. A 21-year-old Cottage Grove man was charged recently with the armed robbery of the Cottage Grove Burger King that occurred in early May. Police allege the man, Michael David Lopez, worked together with his roommate and Burger King employee, Thomas Lovett, to plan the crime. Lopez tied up Lovett and another employee to a broiler and then allegedly stole $1,300, according to the court complaint. A recent car versus motorcycle collision at the intersection of 70th Street and Hardwood Avenue in Cottage Grove had nearby residents calling on officials to make the intersection safer. And for now, they got their wish. Washington County staff will install temporary signal lights there this fall to remain until permanent ones are installed there in 2012. A 53-year-old St. Paul Park man is dead after a fire in his home on First Street last Friday. Richard Andrews was on the floor and unresponsive when firefighters got to the home. The fire is under investigation. High gas prices are leaving few people or companies unaffected, and School District 833 is sure feeling the pinch. The district's gas expenses for the last school year were 20% higher than budgeted, the district's transportation director, Gary DeShane, said at Thursday's school board meeting. DeShane said he expects to spend about $400,000 more next year on fuel. For more on those stories and others, check out the June 11 edition of the South Washington County Bulletin or check our website at www.swcbulletin.com. Next, Newport officials have been worried for a while about an aging Mississippi River levee that runs parallel to Cedar Lane between 15th and 17th Streets. The Army Corps of Engineers recently came to Newport to begin a study on what should be done about the levee. I talked with Newport City Administrator Larry Bodall about the issue this week. Here's our conversation.
First of all, when did Newport officials realize that the aging levee could pose a risk?
Well, I guess you have to go back more into history of when it was actually constructed. And it was constructed as kind of an emergency levee, being that it was there as an emergency and was to be taken out as soon as the emergency subsided. That happened and was originally constructed, and I'm a little soft on this because I hear different dates, but either 1969, 70, or 71, in that range. The levee functioned, did as it should have done, but the city never removed it. Then we had the succession of floods, you know, the 93 flood, the 97 flood, and the 2001 flood. All three of those, we realized that the levee itself was not that, it was not built to design, or it was not designed and built to withstand repeated floods. So in the 97 flood, it was soft. We brought out jersey barriers and sandbagged it. The 97 flood, it was even softer, and at that point, we more or less realized that it was even getting more compromised as far as being able to maintain the power of the river. Council then met and said, you know, for the 2001 flood, we weren't going to put jersey barriers on top of it anymore. It just couldn't maintain that kind of weight, couldn't maintain the equipment that it would take to bring the jersey barriers out. So the 2001 flood, we basically just put in 2x12 planking, staked it, laid down plastic, and sandbagged it. But after that, the council, we had a public hearing, a public meeting with all the residents along there, and the council basically said, we're not going to try and protect the levee again. So over that period of time and over those years, it has just been compromised to a point of not being able to maintain another flood. Mm-hmm. But that's a judgment call. Who knows? But it is certainly not something that that we feel real confident that we can build on top of it and hold back the waters.
Mm-hmm. And how, I guess at what point in this process did you bring in the Army Corps of Engineers and let them know that you were concerned about it?
Well, actually, Army Corps of Engineers is the agency that did the emergency preparation of the levee itself back in 69. They issued reports that it to be removed. In, I want to say it was either 1999 or in 2000, myself, our city engineer, and our public works superintendent traveled out to Washington, D.C. to talk to our representatives and senators about some assistance. What can we do with this levee? Number one, you just don't tear it out because there's houses that are being protected. There's you know, it's a life and safety issue if the levee goes. We need some assistance. The result of that was that the Corps of Engineers then prepared a study. And it, as the federal government has, they've numbered it or labeled it something, and I want to call it a 205 study. I know the Corps of Engineers would certainly be able to tell you better on what the title of that study was. But within that study, they said, remove the levee. Okay. So they've been in the loop from basically the beginning, and the city has known from basically the beginning that it was a temporary levee. It was an emergency levee and not a permanent structure.
Mm-hmm. So I guess why has it taken so long to sort of get to the point where something's being done about it?
Well, that's the great question. You get used to something. When it was put in 69 or 70, or when it was put in, it created a sense of security. Then you didn't have any issues. There wasn't any floods. It just, you know, it was there. Went through the 70s, went through the 80s. It was there as a false sense of protection. It wasn't removed because it served the function of protecting homes. Then over that time, it became more and more compromised by, you know, vegetation, the creeping of houses nearer to it, and also it's built on private property. It's not city-owned property, it's not federal government property, it's privately owned. So it was one of those temporary things that became permanent. But it has got to the point where when you have three consecutive floods within a 10-year period, you find that temporary structure is not built for permanency. Mm-hmm. Asking the question of why it's taken so long. Well, as the, you know, the kind of spin on it is it's Mother Nature versus money, and that was something that Channel 5 tumbled to, and there's some reality to that. If Mother Nature cooperates and it doesn't create a problem, then there's a certain sense of, well, nothing's happened. But where do you come up with money? Now it's got to the point where we are trying to secure dollars from the Corps of Engineers to assist in taking it out, to be able to flood-proof the homes if it is taken out, or if we have to remove homes if it's taken out. The operative word here is we're dealing with the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Army has rules and regulations and step-by-step processes, and there have been other greater natural catastrophes that is kind of drain money away from these smaller projects like we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And why does Newport have to wait on the federal government to get this fixed?
Because Newport doesn't have $20 million that we can go ahead and fix it. And the issue becomes of what do? Do you take it out or do you rebuild? Mm-hmm. the residents, when the council met with the residents, they don't want it rebuilt. If it was going to be rebuilt, it would have to be rebuilt to these specifications of the Corps of Engineers, which would mean it would be a very high and wide structure, which would mean you'd take out a bunch of homes that are already too close to it. The other option is that you take the levee out. Well, if you take the levee out, there's then homes that are directly in the path or would be directly affected by the river, whether it was in flood stage or not, but in particularly in flood stage. So it comes back to, how do you pay for this? Question becoming, if we have 1,500 homes in the city of Newport and the levee is protecting 10, where do you spend your money? Mm-hmm. That's kind of both a financial question and a moral question. But the other part of it is, where do you come up with that kind of money? That's why we're going to the federal government. That's why we're going to the state government through DNR and the Corps of Engineers to say we need some assistance. We had arrived at that assistance, but then a little hurricane called Katrina arrived, and it took a lot of the attention away from projects this size.
Mm-hmm. Have you made contact with the homeowners that would be affected by this? And what kinds of things are they telling you?
The contact was made after the 2001 flood, where we had the public meetings with everybody that was within the floodplain that would be affected either just by a wet basement or a wet yard, all the way up to it would totally flood out the home. So there was a meeting held by the council, well attended by everybody along. What the council did is say, we cannot protect those homes with this levee any longer. That was notification. Now, what's the next step? Well, the city's liability is really not there. Mm-hmm. I think there's a moral liability. If not liability, at least a moral question. But it comes down to how do you come up with that kind of money? I mean, where does that kind of money come from? And we're looking to the federal government and saying, you know, that levee was constructed by the federal government. We need some assistance taking it out, if it's going to be taken out, and we need some assistance to protect the homes, either by paying fair value for those homes and removing them, or paying fair value to floodproof those homes. So that's kind of where we are right now. The Corps, had a meeting with the Corps, say 2 or 3 weeks ago now. They're kind of back in the game. They're doing, once again, they're good at doing studies. So they're doing what's called a reconnaissance. In other words, they're doing an analysis of everybody along there or the affected areas along there and doing it by elevation. But the other part of it too, Patty, is it's not just the homes. If you play a worst case scenario and the levee let go, there would probably be some home flooding, but there would also be public utilities that would be taken out. Public utilities serve people much further beyond the river. So you would lose water, you would lose sewer, you would lose streets. So it's kind of like a ball of twine. You know, when you're pulling on it, it tightens up in some areas, and other areas it loosens up. The residents along the levee are well aware. Anybody that would live on the river certainly knows the power of the river, certainly knows the impact of the levee. But you're also, you know, we live where we call our home. And just because somebody says, you know, that's not a good place to live, that doesn't mean I can't live there. So, and because the levee's on private property, it limits where we can go and what we can do with limited money.
Hmm. So if I understand the situation right, these people that are right in that floodplain there are kind of, you know, they're just hoping nothing happens before something before the city is able to get the funds, or the federal government is able to get the funds to do something? Is that
in a sense, you know, I mean, they are... the levy has protected them for this long. What their position is, you know, they have flood insurance, so if there's a flood or they get water, they have insurance to cover that. You know, and there's certain resignation to it. It's how the analogy is, how different is it that people live in Tornado Alley? You know, it's okay, this is Tornado Alley, there's tornadoes to come by, well, yes, but I don't move. There's people that live on the earthquake, the San Andreas Fault. It's going to be an earthquake. Well, still live there. People live up and down the rivers all over the place. What our position is that, you know, there, we know it's there, the residents know it's there. The river has a mind of its own. Will it flood again? Probably. Do you know when? No. That's why we're moving, you know, this direction. Say, what's the best thing that all of us together, you know, private, public, federal, state, everybody that's in this business of safety are concerned about it. But there's steps that you have to go through to make sure that you don't step on people's private rights. You look at it very, very, very seriously, but you also don't overreact and knee-jerk. We are in what I call negotiations position with a non-negotiating entity being the federal government. If the Corps of Engineers decides that their feasibility, their reconnaissance study, and then their feasibility of cost-benefit studies are such that they see a cost-benefit ratio to be able to assist the city in removing the levee and protecting the homes, then we're in negotiations of how that's covered. It's stages. We'll see where we go with that. In my last meeting, it appeared that by September, or at least the last quarter of this year, we will have another answer on how coordinated this effort can be. We just have to go day at a time and see how we work it out.
All right. Well, Larry, thank you so much for talking with me about this. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome, and let's hope there's not another flood.
That's it for this week's podcast. If you have comments, please email them to editor@swcbulletin.com. Thanks for listening.